ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets a little mentally messy and digs a little deeper into the movies that you love. I almost didn't screw that up. Obviously, I'm not Eddie. You're all used to Eddie rocking the intro. This is Chad. Eddie actually is AWOL. Don't know what happened to him. He went down south seeking glory.
Couldn't take it anymore.
He just couldn't hang. He went off in search of an Oscar of his own.
Yep.
Didn't understand that there's a whole nomination and voting process involved.
Right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he might have been behind the whole snafu at the end. But, you know, I haven't seen the man, so I can't say for sure. I do, however, have the lovely Hannah Porter here in studio.
Hi, guys.
Frequent collaborator here with the Filmlosophers. We are going to dig into all things Oscars today.
Even the nitty-gritty.
Especially the nitty-gritty. I mean, that's all there is to talk about now.
That's true. That is true.
So, yeah, we're going to get at it. With the correct envelope in hand, The Filmlosophers is presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live at VGB Studios. And with a new episode each week, we can't stop the feeling either. Subscribe to The Filmlosophers for free on any day of the week through Player FM, Audio Boom, Libsyn, iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Like the buzz surrounding the stars' red carpet outfits, our conversation never stops swirling. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers. And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101 to discuss movie news throughout the week and share your insights about all things movie-related. Finally, don't forget that you can access all of the amazing podcasts, and there are many now, from VGB Studios by visiting our website at vgbstudios.com. In addition to our entire episode library for The Filmlosophers, you can download installments of Video Game Bang and Me, Mike, Self, and I. So there's lots of love. Lots to love. Hannah and I are going to dig in deep into the Oscars. We've got a lot to talk about. There were so many awards. There was so much drama. There was just, I mean, it was a big night.
I mean, it was very fitting for Hollywood.
Very fitting for Hollywood. Everything that you could hope for. And especially if you were stuck on the East Coast, everything that you at least, you know, kind
stayed
of
up for.
Was worth staying up for in a way. So... anyway, we're going to kick it off with a little Justin Timberlake in the background because that's how they kicked it off on Sunday.
So good.
So, the drama. This year's Oscars gave viewers and culture buffs so many topics for the water cooler and social media. From an energetic and Oscar-nominated opening performance by JT that you could hear in the background just then, to an appropriately self-deprecating monologue from first-time host Jimmy Kimmel, to the incomparable Viola Davis and a huge finale that resulted in Moonlight taking Best Picture and a PricewaterhouseCoopers accountant flying coach back to London. This year's show gave us a lot to love, or at least a lot to talk about afterwards. So, Hannah, I know that it was just not the typical Oscars, and that's kind of what they needed. They've had several years of criticism about why do we still watch this show? Why does it take so long? What's the value for the viewer? Obviously, some people like to tune in early and watch people come in on the red carpet.
Right.
There are a few beats here and there that have, you know, the comedic, you know, Ellen's selfie a few years ago.
Yes.
Got a lot of hits on social.
So famous.
I mean, it's still, it broke Twitter or Facebook or both
internet.
Or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It broke a few things. This year we had candy falling from the sky
and
gimmicky things. Why exactly? Why not? Last year I think was Chris Rock had Girl Scouts selling Girl Scout cookies up and down the aisles.
Ellen had pizza, I think.
I mean, it's, you know, and you got to think for the people in the theater, that's got to be really fun. For the viewer at home, sometimes less so. So at least this year...
Makes it more relatable, though, I think.
It does. But at least this year, with all of the drama that came especially at the end, which we will absolutely get to, but we don't want to pass everything else up because there was quite a bit to talk about. It was an eventful show this year.
It was. There were a lot of really good performances, and some good speeches. It was just, it was one of the better, and like you were saying, more eventful, more kind of power-packed Oscars that I have experienced in a while.
Yeah, it was really nice. I enjoyed, you know, I mentioned a second ago, the performance from Justin Timberlake. I mean, he started outside of the inner doors of the theater, sang and danced his way down the aisle, up on the stage, did a little remix moment, and then went back to the aisle, had a nice dance with his wife, yes. Jessica Biel. So that was really cool. It was a great way to start the show because unlike, I mean, and here's the thing too. Justin Timberlake was involved in the kickoff for both the Golden Globes and the Oscars because he had that little duet thing going on with, you know, Jimmy Fallon in the Golden Globes. And now you've got Jimmy Kimmel, who, as we know from the Honda commercial at the Super Bowl, he played the clarinet in school, but
yes.
is not really a singer. So yeah, Justin kicked it off big time, was really interesting. And then Jimmy Kimmel came out for his monologue. And, you know, overall, I thought that was enjoyable too. There was... Yeah. There was a measuredness to it, which right. I think was very wise because there are a lot of people, I know a lot of people who boycott watching this show because number one, who cares that you're all awarding yourselves things and who cares that you're going to, you know, run your mouth off about things that maybe I do or don't agree with, or, you know, right. it may or may not be the right forum for it. So, you know, the host kind of sets the tone and I thought he did a pretty good job.
And the opening number. I mean, very few people can discredit or even dislike Justin Timberlake in his recent music ventures because he is just a phenomenal performing artist. I mean, he really is.
Yeah, he's got so much energy. I mean, it was, what did Jimmy Kimmel say? You know, good news, NSYNC is going to welcome you back or something. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a quotables kind of person, but... made a little reference to it, right. had a little fun with it.
It was fun, it was lighthearted, it was relatable, and it was just the right thing at the right time that not only this award show needed, but that I think the entire audience and just world needed. You know, yeah. just like a lighthearted, fun, good performance.
Yeah, I agree. And something that really, I mean, it emphasized the humanity mm-hmm. of these people. I think sometimes with, especially the more prominent stars, you see what they can do on the screen and there's a certain status that's either expected or assumed. And I loved when, in the beginning, Jimmy Kimmel was throwing some shade at Meryl Streep, you know, some good-natured shade, talking about how she's yes. been essentially just phoning it in for right. what, more than 24 years yeah. or whatever. Like,
right.
we just keep putting her name on the ballot because of whatever. And right. I mean, she was adorable, trying to hide behind her husband's arm and all of that right there in the front row. So it was nice because obviously she had an impassioned speech during the Golden Globes that,
right.
you know, has brought a lot of attention mm-hmm. to, you know, her making a decision to speak on politically motivated subject matters.
Right.
You know, but he towed the line, but he didn't go over it.
Yep.
And I thought it was really smart, especially because it was his first year, possibly of many, although by the end of it, he was saying, don't worry,
like,
I won't be
I'm
back.
I'm out. I knew this was going to happen. I knew something was going to happen.
I mean,
I knew I was going to screw it up.
Yeah. I mean,
as much as, you know, there's definitely a fine line there, but the self-deprecating humor, especially from someone on such a prominent stage,
mm-hmm.
is so relatable in those kind of moments where it's like, hey, like, maybe it wasn't his fault at all. He had nothing to do with it, but he was willing to just stand up there and be like, hey, like, this is a mess and I'll take full credit for it. I'm out. Let's all yes. go home. I don't know what's going on.
Well, and thankfully by the end, which again, we'll talk more in detail in a bit, but by the end, so many people were very gracious about what was an obvious mistake. It very obviously played as an honest mistake.
Right.
And people who started saying thank yous, people who finished saying thank you. I mean, like, everybody handled it probably as well as you could mm-hmm. expect. Jimmy Kimmel later said, you know, we scrapped our entire, like, last joke just to, like, get out of it graciously.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so overall, I mean, it was a rough and tumble finale for him, but I thought overall he was a pretty yeah. enjoyable host.
He did a great job. I will give him a lot of credit for that.
Absolutely. So the first major award of the evening was Best Actor in a Supporting Category. And that went to Mahershala Ali for Moonlight, which was extremely exciting. I loved his speech. He was talking about his teachers who had inspired him and motivated him to stay, you know, pursuing this dream. And I thought it was a really nice way. It reminded me in some ways of Lupita Nyong'o, who won a couple years ago, three or four years ago now, for 12 Years a Slave. She won supporting actress. Yes. And like, I totally owned the evening. I mean, was just elegant and, you know, just lovable. And it was
everything
really nice.
That everyone wanted to be and has wanted to be. But she captured it, the essence of it, because she was so genuine. And that's kind of what he did this time. I mean, it was just, the speech was so heartfelt.
Yes. And very personal.
Absolutely.
You know, it wasn't this whole, let me pull out my little index card or like receipt tape paper of length with a bunch of names on it.
Right.
I don't want to forget anybody. You know, like it was in a way understated, but on the flip side of it, very profound.
Right.
You know, because it's, you know, kind of speaking to the next person on our list, Viola Davis, it was kind of that reflection of these are real human lives that are worth reflecting. Right. And I mean, she just, I love that. This woman, she's incredible.
I love Viola Davis. Yeah. Oh my word.
I still don't understand why she was in the supporting category versus the best actress category, but whoever made that decision, they made the decision. She got the award. Yeah. She totally deserved it. Her speech was just gorgeous. For those of us who, I'm a word person. Mm-hmm. I love using words well and using them effectively. Yep. And I mean, exhume the stories of real people. I mean, man, it was beautiful.
Yeah. And it makes people feel, and that's what a good speech does. I mean, I totally appreciate and understand the people that stand up there and, like you said, bring out their whole laundry list of people that they want to thank and they don't want to forget anyone. And I appreciate that because there's a lot of people to thank. But when someone can stand up there and give a heartfelt, meaningful speech that makes the people in the audience and at home feel something, that transcends everything else. And no one is worried about what names you said or what even film you're up there for. They're worried about you as a person and how you're relating to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes all the difference in the world.
And you could tell that she was ready. I mean, this was not the first award she's won for this role. And that's what I think is beautiful, too. A lot of times people only tune into the Oscars because it's kind of the last stop on the train of the awards season train. And it's the biggest one. I mean, it's the one that has the most notoriety attached to it.
Yeah. It's the second most watched, I think, TV event outside of the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl, yeah. I mean, it's a big deal. And but, you know, she's won the award for, you know, in other awards shows. She's thanked all those people already a few times. So here you've got this, you know, massive moment. Because quite honestly, although she's, you know, a fairly prominent actress right now active in Hollywood, people know who she is. But a lot of times you'll have some of these lesser known performers who their acceptance speech is a standout moment of their career.
Yep.
You know, and I love that she took the stage with the tears and the emotions and the heartfelt, and but she launched into it. She knew what she wanted to say. It was a deep and meaningful thing. And huge congrats to her for being the first African American woman have Emmy, Tony, and Oscar.
Such a huge and amazing moment. I mean, just in history. It was so, and no, in my mind, no one better.
Mm-hmm.
No one better than her to take that and to, I mean, she's so elegant and grace-filled, and she is just the perfect person to embody everything that I wish Hollywood was all of the time.
Right, yeah, because it's such a me-driven kind of, I mean, it feeds egos most of the time, but you can tell, having watched her, for example, at the Golden Globes, she was the one who presented the Achievement Award, the Cecil B. DeMille Achievement Award to Meryl Streep. Her comments to Meryl Streep were so genuine and so generous of spirit, you know, that it's there. You can tell that there's this core of humility, even in her speech on Sunday when she's, you know, speaking about her parents and her husband and her daughter and Denzel as both director and co-star, you know, kind of, you know, guiding the train. She spoke about the playwright slash screenwriter for Fences. She spoke about God. It was just, it was quite an amazing speech, and one that if you haven't heard it, you should definitely go look it up, because it's one of those moments that makes you feel proud to be a human being, and to have somebody expressing a little, you know, a little powerful piece of what it feels like to be a human being and to be alive.
And I think we really, really, as a nation and as a culture, really needed that.
Yeah. And it's nice that it came early, because again, you had the, you know, that self-deprecating humor in Kimmel's monologue and, you know, playing around with Meryl Streep and whatever. And then, you know, not too long after that, I mean, you had the, again, Mahershala Ali, Viola Davis, they both had really great moments, and it just, it kind of, it steadied, you know, I think that early into the show that, you know, is going to be 3 hours plus that early, you're like, okay, so how are people really going to be in front of that microphone? And they really set a tone that for the most part carried through the entire evening and was a very positive one. The other big awards in terms of the performance categories, the other big awards come near the end of the show. And that would be Best Actor and Best Actress. Best Actor was highly contested. A lot of people were going one of two ways, either Denzel Washington for Fences or Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea. Both of them incredibly accomplished performances, both of them devastatingly depressing films in certain ways, which Oscar seems to like.
Yep.
I was mentioning right before the show, I had the pleasure of watching Hacksaw Ridge on Saturday before seeing the awards. I have just a few that I'm still trying to catch up on from,
same here.
You know, the movies on the ballot. And Hacksaw Ridge, you know, got it on Redbox, watched it, loved it. And I was like, man, I don't know why Andrew Garfield is not in the mix here, because his range and what he had to do in that movie was so incredible. But ultimately, the Oscar went to Casey Affleck. And it's interesting because I also only recently saw Manchester by the Sea, which first came out, I believe, at Sundance in 2016, got huge word of mouth street cred. I mean, people talked immediately about this is going to be an Oscar contender for sure. I saw it. It's just a devastating movie in certain ways. And surprisingly understated performance. I mean, there are certain breakout moments over the course of, you know, 2 hours and 15 minutes or however long the film is. But I have to say, I'm surprised that the Academy went in the direction that they did. Not to say that it wasn't a good performance.
Right.
I just, it was so much of the performance was in such a state of subtlety and nuance that it was hard to see any differentiation unless you're really, really watching. With just a few punctuation marks versus, you know, Denzel's performance.
Very impassioned.
Lots of moments of punctuation, if you will. You know, or, you know, like I said, Garfield and several of the others. I mean, Ryan Gosling, La La Land, that was fairly even keel the whole time too.
Right.
For the most part. But anyhow, Casey Affleck, Best Actor, Best Actress.
Well done,
went
Casey.
To our darling Emma Stone for La La Land.
I know that this title gets thrown around to a lot of different people, but she really, right now especially, does feel like one of America's sweethearts.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what a lot of people appreciate about her is, like you've been saying this whole conversation, her approachable demeanor. I mean, when you see her on the late night talk shows or the morning shows or whatever, I mean, it's just like, oh, you're a human being. You're not you're not a star.
Like, I want to be friends with her. That's the feeling that you get when you see Emma Stone in interviews, even movies. It's, I want to be friends with her.
She Lip Sync Battle on the map, basically.
Oh, it's still one of the best
performances
of Lip Sync Battle to this day.
All she does is win, 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 no matter what, including the Oscar. Big moment
for
her.
You know, she should have done it there on stage.
Well, she had an interesting moment, too, with a lot of times when you have people getting up and doing their acceptance speeches, they compliment the other members of their category, whether that's performing or editing or, you know, score or soundtrack, whatever, writing. And she had a lot of very complimentary, wonderful things to say to the other women who were up for Best Actress, many of whom would have been equally deserving.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's nice to see. I mean, she kind of went all the way with this role in La La Land. I mean, she got Golden Globes. She got the BAFTA. She got, I believe she, I don't remember all of them, but Producers Guild Award. She got maybe SAG and now Oscar. So it was fun, too, to see her interview backstage. Family-friendly warning. There were a couple of potty words in it. But that notwithstanding, she was very candid. They asked her about, you know, how did she feel about everything that happened at the end. And she said, all I want to say is I had my envelope in my hand the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody took it from me and gave it back to them. Of course, she didn't know yet that there are always two envelopes of every award. It's a, you know, a stopgap against like, oh, we don't have an envelope for this. I mean, you have a backup.
Yeah.
So in a way, that makes total sense from a logical standpoint. But she said, you know, I wanted to make sure that I wanted to come and tell you first, meaning the press. I wanted to come and talk to you first and clear the air about that. But again, very gracious and very supportive of Moonlight, which ultimately took Best Picture.
Yeah.
But, you know, really liked the movie. And
yeah, I mean, her and Ryan Gosling both in that whole snafu were just, I mean, they had their moments and their reactions, which were caught on, you know, film and camera and pictures and memes and everything. But ultimately, they were very gracious and, for the most part, pretty even keel, you know, as far as their reactions. They had, you know, some highs and everything like that. But I think one of the beautiful things about the messiness of that particular moment was that everyone, even though shocked, were very gracious and very supportive of Moonlight, and Moonlight was very supportive.
And vice versa, yeah.
Back,
it was very complimentary.
Yes. There was, it seemed, I can't speak for their actual emotions and feelings, but it seemed very friendly and supportive and gracious and loving back and forth both ways between both films and the cast members and crew of each film.
Yeah, I think that it's really special. Obviously, there's for a long time now, there's been tension between Hollywood and the political realm, Hollywood and the general public in many cases, because a lot of these performers especially, and even some of the behind the scenes, the producers, boatloads of cash, big mansions, vacation homes all over the world, private jets, all this kind of stuff. Some of the composers eventually get to that really upper echelon level, the top 1% in the world or whatever in terms of earning potential and income and lifestyle and all of that. And so I think that there's a lot of times, you know, there's a divide between what is the experience of somebody who reaches those heights in a Hollywood setting versus most of the rest of us. And there's a tension there. And sometimes these award shows, without meaning to, really emphasize, wow, how different your experience is than mine sitting in my living room watching you. Like, what a charmed life you lead.
Right.
And I think that moments like, you know, the snafu at the end.
My peasant life over here.
Right. Yeah. I'm churning my own butter and not to say people do, and that's respectable. But, you know, I mean, you do have that dissonance a lot of times. And I think that there were a lot of moments in Sunday night's telecast that, especially at the end, where, you know, you've got this experience that's more like, you know what, now more than ever, we need to get along. Like, we need to support each other. Art is art. And at some level, if I don't support my fellow artist, then I'm crippling myself.
Right. It humanized everything.
Yeah.
And that was a special moment in the midst of the chaos.
Now, in terms of humanizing, I'm glad you said, you know, it humanized the moment. There were some other humanizing moments that fell a little flatter. One of the gimmicky things that they did this year with Jimmy Kimmel as host was they invited a tour bus of people into the theater right in the middle of the show, and they're there with their camera phones taking pictures, and they've, you know, they get their touristy garb on, and I mean, they're just it was not super well received. It seemed like a bit of a misstep. But then you had other things like the very well documented, if you follow Jimmy Kimmel at all, and if you followed him for years, he has this ongoing feud with Matt Damon.
Yes.
And so one of the things he did in the beginning was he wanted to bury the hatchet, and this, you know, played out a little bit over the course of the show. So you had things like, you know, Matt Damon inadvertently tripping Jimmy Kimmel while he walked near him.
Right.
And I really thought that moments like that were a lot of fun.
And that's carrying on something that, for the most part, people that, like you said, have followed Jimmy Kimmel for a while are going to know about. They're going to know about that ongoing quote-unquote feud and just the humor surrounding it. And, you know, maybe with some of their other missteps, the intention behind it was good, or or it was, you know, they were trying to do something that was funny or humorous or humanizing, and the actual execution of it just kind of fell flat. And that happens. Happens, I think, at every award show, every event, everything, everywhere. Sometimes intentions versus execution don't always line up together.
Well, and it's always hard when you're talking about, you know, a group of presumably like-minded people, and some of what happens, even though there are cameras broadcasting to millions of people elsewhere, some of what happens, they are inside jokes.
Yes.
It's like if you went to somebody's family reunion as a guest,
right,
you're not going to understand
what
everything that people laugh
right
at.
Now.
You're not going to understand all the weird little
nuances and
traditions, odd, like, why does...
Oh, I've been a part of those moments before. Super awkward.
Why does only that person get to, like, cut the cake or open, you know, the... whatever it is, only this person gets to take photos. Why? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's that same kind of dynamic, but as a in a pseudo-professional setting. So some of what you see in these award shows, it looks very... kind of self promotional, or you know, just the rest of us aren't a part of that joke or a part of that story, and so people get turned off by it. But I think a lot of what we have to keep in mind is they might be neighbors. Like, they might do this.
Yeah.
They might see each other every day and you don't know that.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, an interesting thought is if you're, you know, at your job or your school or wherever you may be, if you have a Christmas dinner or an appreciation dinner or a banquet or whatever your workplace or school might do, if you just brought in a bunch of random people to said appreciation dinner, you'd be like, well, but this was meant for our group and our team for appreciation, just this one moment, this one night, that's all we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not understand, like we were saying, the nuances that are going on. It just happens to be that the Oscars are so much more glamorous than I'm pretty sure all of our Christmas
of our
dinners like put
awards
together.
Yeah.
And far more expensive. But it's still a similar premise. You know, it's just, it's this is their job. This is what they do. And it's kind of a very, 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 very glamorous, you know, over glamorized work appreciation dinner.
Absolutely. I mean, if I had to dress up in a really, really nice tuxedo like that, I mean, I'd want to make sure that it was an enjoyable time.
Yes,
I wouldn't want to just like be sitting there bored
and
not care about anything that was going on. So let's get into some of these other categories. We'll do a quick rundown of some of the other winners. Best Director went to Damien Chazelle for La La Land, which was, I thought, a really great thing. He's very young. As is Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight. And it's nice to see some of that kind of that millennial generation. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, favoritism, because I'm also millennial. You're a millennial.
I am.
Eddie's
a
millennial.
I'm basically 90 at heart, but in age, physically, I'm a millennial.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and so it's nice to see some of the, you don't have to be super well established with all those miles on the odometer of your professional career before you're recognized.
Right. But I will say this. I think with Damien Chazelle, one of the reasons why he might have won this is because he was willing to be teachable enough to pull from and learn from the classics, the old films, the old producers, the old directors, everything in kind of the golden era of Hollywood. And that showed in La La Land from Absolutely. how the movie was filmed, how the scenes were filmed, how they weren't cut when modern films would cut everything, you know, all of that attention to detail of how old movies were filmed and created. He poured a lot of that into La La Land. So as a millennial, I was super proud of how he did that, how he was able and willing to be teachable enough to learn from the wisdom of what has come before him, but also bring a fresh new perspective and flavor into it and marry the two together really, really well.
Yeah, one of the things that I love about just entertainment culture nowadays as a whole is not only the willingness to experiment with new forms, but the willingness to kind of recombine with old forms. You see it a lot in music.
Mm-hmm. Remixes all the time.
Remixes and just an older sound coming back to the forefront. Yes. As something that's valued and something that not only do performers enjoy creating and performing, but the audience enjoys hearing, hopefully buying, so that the right. artists stay around. I love that you're seeing that happen in films mm-hmm. as well. It's not just the period pieces or those like nostalgic biopics that are right. that are kind of carrying some of those torches. Here, La La Land was a beautiful blend of very modern and very classic, all in the same frame, all under the same umbrella,
yeah.
Which was nice. Also got best cinematography for La La Land,
which
I believe.
Which was interesting to me.
Yes, it got best score and best cinematography, as well as best director, best actress, and
first time watching La La Land, I did not like the cinematography. That was something I noticed almost immediately. That it confused me. I didn't like it. Something mm-hmm. felt weird. And a coworker and I were actually talking about this, and he was saying to me, he was like, "I don't know what it is, but it felt like there were just like one too many expectations that they changed or that they didn't meet that threw me off." And cinematography was one of those common threads for a bunch of people I've talked to. But now, kind of revisiting that and looking at it from an older film perspective, mm-hmm. which I love. I am an old film aficionado. I love old films. That's what I grew up on. I can appreciate the cinematography so much more. But at first watch, I didn't like it.
You know, I have to say, I think that Magic Hour saved the day for them.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they filmed that
yes.
sequence,
whatever,
the dance sequence,
2 days,
you know,
and like 10 takes or something.
I think that it's so hard to capture the right light and the right time all in one take, you know, all of that. And I think that wowed people so much mm-hmm. in terms of the voting members of the Academy.
Right.
Personally, I was hoping Arrival would have gotten it because that movie astounded me with mm-hmm. the variety of the visual storytelling that happened in that film.
Right.
And I was really hoping for them to win. I was disappointed when it didn't. I still love La La Land, but I think that Magic Hour sealed the deal.
Yeah.
I really do. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Best Adapted Screenplay went to Moonlight. So Moonlight won 3 overall awards,
mm-hmm.
Including Mahershala Ali for Best Supporting Actor. They got the Best Adapted Screenplay, which, again, I was really hoping Arrival was going to get Best Adapted Screenplay because I thought it was a brilliantly written film, extremely complex, and it was surprising to me. We mentioned it in our episode where we recapped and reviewed the film, but it was a different movie than I expected it to be,
mm-hmm.
and that's very rare to go in totally like expecting, and for good reason, expecting a movie to be a certain way, and then it surprises you and is better because it's not what you thought it was going to be.
Most of the time, it's the other way around.
Yeah, most of the time, it's a total letdown when that happens.
All the good scenes are in the trailers.
Arrival totally nailed it for me.
Yeah.
I was sitting there like dumbfounded by the end of it, like, right. oh, this wasn't a figure it out movie. Okay. So yeah, I really yeah. wanted them to win. Still, yeah. Hats off total all the kudos in the world to Barry Jenkins and his crew for Moonlight. Yeah. Manchester by the Sea got Best Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. Disney had a pretty big night. They got Best Animated with Zootopia, Best Animated Short with Piper, mm-hmm. Which was that if you had the opportunity to see it, it was the little the baby bird. It was I believe a type of seagull. Don't quote me on that, but the baby seagull like bird at the shore of the ocean, kind of fighting with the incoming water from the ocean, and then finding out that Piper, the little bird, actually ended up loving the water. It looked mm-hmm. it looked like they would never ever like it because they got drowned, almost drowned that one time. And anyway, it was a really cute movie. It was in front of Moana, I believe. I could be totally wrong about that. Anyway, it was in front of one of the earlier releases of the year, and it was completely adorable. Actually, I don't think it was Moana. It came earlier than that. But at any rate, best animated short.
It took 3 years to make it.
I mean, it was... When that started, I would have believed that it was a film, like filmed with a camera. The landscape work and even the details on the feathers and everything. I mean, it looked very photoreal until the more comical things started happening and you knew that it was an animated character.
The animation,
I would have believed it,
is pretty incredible. It's it looks like fantastic children's book illustrations. Mm-hmm. And I have 10 nieces and nephews, so I know a lot about
Your way around
children's
a kid's story.
Books.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I look for most is the illustration. And this caught my attention because of the animation, that it looked like a really amazing illustration. And it was one of the best animations I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was one of those shorts. I believe it was Pixar. Pixar does such amazing, amazing shorts. I mean, hardly any of them flop in my mind. But this one was really, really great.
It was right before Finding Dory, side note.
Finding Dory.
Yes.
Because I knew while I was talking, I'm like, that was actually a Pixar short.
It was
what
before
was the Pixar
a
movie
water
this year?
Film. There yeah. were a few water films. Moana, Finding Dory.
This is why I love the internet, because it can help with so many things. Hats off, by the way,
oh,
also
my
on
word.
The Disney train, Auli'i Carvalho. Mm-hmm. I think
yes.
I did not butcher her last name.
I think you said it correctly.
But yeah, I mean, she was in the middle of her performance, totally got hit
in the head
by a flag behind her, and just like, I mean, like a seasoned pro.
A pro.
Just kept going with
amazing.
It.
Amazing. And didn't miss a beat either. Didn't miss a note, and was just her facial expressions, everything.
Yeah.
Completely professional. I was very impressed. And how old is she? 15, 16?
She's young, yeah. 15, 16. And one of the coolest things is obviously she played Moana in the mm-hmm. movie. And so you, aside from if you've seen an interview with her, you don't know what she looks like, who she is necessarily. So it was really great because, you know, I mean, She did both the speaking track and the singing track
right.
for the character yes. in the film. And so, I mean, great moment for her. Mm-hmm. I think even as much as we said earlier, sometimes when you're a lesser known performer and you get an award, then, you know, your star power goes up or whatever. You have a moment, right?
Right.
But then here's an example. That song did not end up ultimately winning Best Original Song. That went to City of Stars. From La La Land, but she had an outstanding moment, and I think it was extremely special for her because the movie she was in was an animated film. Mm-hmm. Like, so people haven't necessarily seen her
right.
as a performer, you know,
right.
not mediated by technology.
Yeah. And they got to see her in not just, you know, it wasn't just a good performance. It was a great performance because of how she reacted or didn't react to the factors surrounding her. And Lin-Manuel Miranda came out and did kind of a little rap piece right
yep.
before, which was really cool. And he was the composer and creator of the entire soundtrack for Moana. Yeah, I just...
Overall golden boy of Tonys and Oscars, yes, at least at the moment.
And music and Broadway and everything, yeah, right now. He is kind of the king of all that.
He's the deal.
Yes. So it was I really liked that performance and that moment. It was just really cool to me, especially seeing her as just a young, fresh face and entertainer. And she, yep, just did so well.
But the most important thing is you don't let it shake you, and nope, she didn't. And I think that, I mean, that's a great professional moment, yep, for her. The Jungle Book, the live action Jungle Book, got best visual effects. I think that was very well deserved.
Very well deserved. That film, I was not surprised at that.
You know that they're animated, but sometimes you don't know that they're animated. Right. It was amazing. Film editing went to Hacksaw Ridge. Here's an interesting surprise. Granted, with a category that only had 3 nominees, but best hair and makeup, Suicide Squad.
I mean, it won something.
It won something. I had our dear friend Omar, who's been on the show a couple times to talk about, you know, DC Universe, Marvel Universe, whatever. He immediately sent me a text message wanting to know how many Oscars Civil War got.
Wow.
So that was exciting. Touche, but that doesn't mean that it was. It's hard to say. I do want to respect the craftsmen who did the work of the makeup, right, and the hair and the all. I mean, it was a very textural film.
Yes.
For all that, I wasn't entirely impressed by the film overall. Mm-hmm. Pulling off the look of each of those different characters so distinctly, right, in such a dark.
It's a very different feel.
Gritty. Yeah. I mean, it's quite an
accomplishment. It's grunge and gritty meets, yeah, like neon and all of these different things and very distinct characters, like you were saying. And, yeah, so, you know, they made it happen, and they got an award.
You know, you
that's
take
pretty,
the win. Just take the win.
At that point, if I was a part of that team, knowing all the conversations that were happening around that film, I would be pretty excited.
Yep. Me as well. So, kind of last but not least, before we transition into a bit of movie news, let's talk about that Hollywood ending to the Oscars. So, you know, I don't know. Some people are still upset with them, but I have to say, I really feel for Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway.
My word.
I mean, they come out there, they don't know that they've got the wrong envelope in their hand. They do their whole thing. It's the biggest moment of the night. It's the most, yeah, prestigious award in the entire industry.
It's a big, big moment.
And then you had that moment where it looked like Warren Beatty was toying
doing
around.
A bit.
Like, you thought that he was being funny.
I mean,
she thought he was being funny.
It's him. He would do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
He would do it really well. And that's what everyone thought. Like, oh, he's doing a bit.
Yeah, but it wasn't a bit. And accidentally, she announced what she saw written on the card, which was La La Land. They, right, come up, they start giving really great little, you know, personal speeches about, you know, so-and-so was talking about his wife and how supportive she's been. And then another guy started coming up and talking and whatever. And then you see the man with the headset in the background. And I think for the at-home audience, it was very clear, like, oh, yeah, something is wrong, because you don't ever see those people. They don't come out onto the stage, especially not in the middle of the biggest award, the speech accepting the biggest award of the night, of the year. So yeah, awkward,
very
on live
awkward
TV. There's no way to get around it. Other than to do exactly what the one producer did. He came back up to the microphone. He stopped the other producer. He said, wait a minute, hold on. We did not win this award.
Right.
This is not a joke. Moonlight won.
Yes.
Moonlight, you guys need to come up here. You guys won.
Right.
And you totally deserve it. You know, like, I mean, obviously, things could have gone a very different way. Thankfully, mm-hmm, they didn't.
Right.
But it was like you mentioned earlier, it was such an interesting moment,
mm-hmm,
not only for the drama of it, but to really just see a bunch of human beings,
right,
dealing with a situation that none of them would have wanted to deal with,
right, in an environment and in kind of a world, as many people would call Hollywood, where everything is polished and everything is produced, and something went wrong,
yeah,
and it was kind of a little peek behind the curtain, and everyone, including all the people in the audience, it was so fun. I mean, fun might be the wrong word.
Hey, we
here,
were spectators. It can
but
be fun.
Yeah, it was fun to see the compilations of all the different reactions of people in the crowd, but everyone was just in like a collective gasp of like, oh my word, this is actually happening right now. What do we do? This is so awkward.
Yes.
Oh,
and then they're all on stage together, and then it's like everybody's already upset by how long this thing is running, so did they get to make their speeches? Of course they do. You know, like, I mean, but again, it was so, they were as gracious as they could have been, you know, and, you know, too bad. Now we all know that there are two envelopes for every award, which
like
makes
sense.
Like
I said, a little peek behind the curtain.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? In a show like that, you want the only surprises to be the ones that you've already planned. In this case, it wasn't. Jimmy Kimmel, of course, had his moment of like, and I won't be back next year.
Right.
Thank you. You know, but I have to say, afterwards, probably the most delightful thing that I've seen, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this or not, but the Meryl Streep face meme where, so what they do now is they have all these cameras that are showing you things. Like if you are that interested and you want to know something other than what the main cameras are showing you during the telecast, you can go online and see like the backstage cameras and some other things that are set up around the theater. One of them caught Meryl Streep's reaction to the upset where the La La Land team needed to vacate the stage and the Moonlight team deserved to come up and accept their award. And I mean, she turned right to this camera and it is priceless. This face, the reaction, it's so genuine. Again, it's that human component. I think the thing that I appreciated the most this year was you saw a room full of human beings. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes these things can be so formal or stodgy. I mean, like there's such a, I don't know, a pomp and circumstance about all of it sometimes that it's only those standout, you know, acceptance speeches like Viola Davis, where you're like, oh my gosh, you are just an incredible human being. But I think there were so many moments in Sunday's telecast that were like, you're a human being, you're a human being, you're a human, everybody's a human being in this
and
room.
Would we really at this point expect anything less from Meryl Streep? I mean, it was such a perfect moment of just her reaction and the whole thing. And she is just the embodiment of all things overacted in Hollywood. And it's so great. I mean, I love Meryl Streep. She's
an amazing, phenomenal. Overacts when she's supposed to overact.
It's never, it's always done when it's supposed to be done. And it's never it's always intentional.
Yes.
Essentially. And even this moment in a genuine but intentional reaction.
Yes. And it's just one of my favorite, I think it was a tweet that said, you know, even in this moment, Meryl's out-acting everybody in the room. And,
so
and
true.
Specifically not over-acting, but just out-acting. Like,
out-acting.
Doing more than everybody else
because
in the
room. Because that's what Meryl Streep does.
In spite of what Jimmy Kimmel says in his monologue where she's just been cashing it in.
Right.
You know, phoning it in for
she's so
however
great.
Many years. So, really exciting, regardless of how you feel about Oscars and performance acceptance speeches and all of that. I think that there was quite a lot to talk about after this year's show. So with that, we're going to transition quickly into a little bit of movie news because we wouldn't want to leave you with just one thing to talk about since you've probably already been talking about the Oscars. We got a couple other things to cover before we sign off. First up, Get Out, which is a film written and directed by Jordan Peele of Key and Peele fame. Get Out brought a lot of moviegoers in over the weekend. The compelling new horror film, which offers a twist on the Meet the Parents experience, has achieved two serious high-water marks over the weekend. First, it earned more than $30 million in ticket sales over its first 3 days in the theater. And second, at least during the weekend, it had a 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So
it now has 99.
I know. There was just that one critic that had to go in and give it a splat.
147 fresh, and that's part of the rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and one rotten.
One rotten, so it brings the average down. To wit, none of the Best Picture nominees in this year's Oscar ceremony accomplished either of those feats. And Get Out has already made back its meager budget of $4.5 million and then some. So $4.5 million to make, $30 million take on the first weekend, and 100% Rotten Tomatoes, at least for the 3 days of the weekend.
From a business perspective, that ROI is incredible.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. Now, does that mean that because it performed better than any of the Best Picture nominees that it's going to be up for an Oscar next year? Probably not. But great moment for Jordan Peele in his career to distinguish. You know, he's very well known for his comedy, but to show that serious side is a big deal. Second piece of news, the Xenomorph has a face, and it's horrifying. Today, well, yesterday, for those of you who are listening on Wednesday, on Tuesday, 20th Century Fox released a new trailer for its Ridley Scott-helmed follow-up to Prometheus, which is titled Alien Covenant. Unlike the long-form teaser scene that was released last week, this new glimpse into the first mission to colonize the stars plays up the film's ties to the original quadrilogy with a new look at the predatory extraterrestrials that are terrorizing the crew of the spaceship Covenant.
Yeah, they're not pretty.
Yeah, I mean, they never have been, let's be honest. They've never been pretty, but they've usually always been animatronic and therefore slow most of the time. Yeah, not here. This thing is like active, very fast, tendrils like waving all over the place. It's jumping, it's headbutting the glass and breaking. I mean, it is terrifying, right? Yeah.
Creative, so, but terrifying.
Yeah, very, very creative, but yeah, I mean, it is, I mean, it's like all the potential that you always knew was there and it was kind of scared you in the original films. It's like manifested now in like full CGI glory. Right. So the trailer does debut the sleek, swift, and horrifying Xenomorph, which looks just as menacing in the daylight as it once did in the shadows. So a lot of times with the animatronic aliens in the original films, there was just, it was nighttime, it was shadows, it was dark, and that helped the robot blend into the the set. Now with CGI, you don't need that to happen. So yeah, you see it in all of its muscular, slobbering glory. Yeah, it's pretty terrifying to see. Alien Covenant opens in theaters on May 19th, so we'll probably see some more of it in other teasers before ultimately the film comes out beginning of summer.
And probably in my nightmares, but that's fine.
You know, just watch it at some time. Like, watch it on a lunch break and then do other things with your life for the next several hours before
maybe
you fall asleep.
Don't watch it, like, right before you go to
bed.
Yeah,
no. Mm. Yeah, it's you don't see a whole lot of it, but what you see is...
it's enough.
I mean, especially if you saw the original films when you were younger and you already have a little bit of emotional, like, psychological scarring... then it brings it all back.
Boy, do I.
That's all I'm saying is it brings it back. Last but certainly not least, in terms of our news roundup, a couple weeks ago, there was a report that was published that movies in 2016 featured a record number of women protagonists, which I think is phenomenal. One of the things that we like to promote on the Film Philosophers is not only in front of the screen, which is what this is about, but also behind the scenes, women in prominent roles in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It's been an area where the industry has lacked for a long time. Thankfully now the push to get more women into positions of power in Hollywood is louder and more on the radar, I guess, of the general public. And so female protagonists were more visible on movie screens in 2016, comprising 29% of the lead characters in the top 100 domestic grossing films last year. Obviously, that means 71% of the main characters were male.
Right.
Progress is progress, but there's still a long way to go.
Yep, steps. And I mean, I think we even saw that in the Oscars with Meryl Streep getting the award that she got, and even Viola Davis having the Tony Oscar.
Yeah.
Emmy. I mean, just a few really, really great standout moments as far as prominent women
in
prominent roles.
Well, and it's nice because you get that sense of momentum, and you know that as long as collectively we keep the momentum up, it will grow.
Right.
You know, you're not where you want to be, but you are further than you were before.
Yes.
So sometimes that has to be good enough in the interim.
Yes.
The study was conducted by the Center for the Study of Women in Television at San Diego State University if you want to learn more. And with that, we have arrived at the end of this episode. Hannah, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
For
my pleasure.
Picking up Eddie's slack.
I could never replace Eddie, but
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we might have to talk afterwards because I had a great time. And sometimes with Eddie, no, I kid. I always have a great time. He'll be back next week. We're actually going to be celebrating our 1 year birthday Yay! Anniversary as a podcast, which That's is awesome. Huge. It's crazy to think that we've reached a whole year and really odd that we end our first season, if you will, talking about the Oscars, which is in a way, kind Very of a fitting. Capstone moment mm-hmm. for a whole season of, film. So, obviously we've had you on several times before. We will continue to have you on, again and again and again.
Keep
Thank you for
me
your
back
insight.
For some reason.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's 'cause you do such a darn good job. This is the part where Eddie would normally say, well, for all of us here at the Filmlosophers, and he would say his name and I would say mine, but really it's just me, so I'll say I'm Chad.
And I'm Hannah.
And that's it. Class dismissed.